Welcome to SEC Unfiltered, home of the best SEC content on the internet. The following is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is the simplest fantasy game on the market, focused around prop total entries. You pick 2 to 6 players, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks has no sharks, optimizers, or mass multi-entry guys. It's literally just you against the projection. They also allow mixed sport entry. So, for example, you can take the over on LeBron, parlay with the under on Mahomes. They've got college sports, pro sports, literally anything and everything you can think of. They have got it over at Prize Picks. They also have a slick, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They're rated 4.8 stars in the App Store with rave reviews as well. Guys, so many fans and listeners of SEC Unfiltered have made tons of money with our friends at Prize Picks, and you should as well. So again, go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Be sure to check them out and tell them that Chris from SEC Unfiltered sent you. Let's get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The weekend of SEC baseball is officially in the books as 6 conference weekends are down. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Phillips. He's Harrison Fant. Appreciate each and every single one of you tuning in. This is the windup as we talk all things that took place over the weekend on the diamond in the SEC. Guys, as always, be sure you hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube. Hit that bell icon as well so you get notifications of when we go live and when we drop new video content, which is each and every single day. You can also check out the podcast, which drops daily, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We're all across social media as well. And of course, guys, check out our website, secunfiltered.com, for all the latest from us. Guys, as always, like I mentioned, I'm joined by my co-host, Harrison Fant. Harrison, what's going on, man? Appreciate you taking the time. Looking forward to talking all things SEC baseball.
Chris, glad to be here. And nothing more that you and I love than talking college baseball and the SEC. And another week that delivered for us and for a lot of the fans too around the country, around the SEC for sure.
And Harrison, on that note, we're about a month away from the SEC tournament. We're just a little bit over a month away from the Selection Monday, Field of 64, and the postseason, right? Time is running out on some teams. Some teams are obviously feeling pretty good. They're padding their resumes, but we are getting right. The weather's starting to warm up even more. The month of May is just around the corner. I feel like no sport flies by quite like college baseball season does. But again, like I mentioned, Harrison, we are 6 weekends into conference play specifically. So with that being said, let's go ahead and dive in everything. And of course, the series of the weekend that took place in Lexington, Kentucky, the 4th-ranked Tennessee Volunteers traveled to Kentucky Proud Park to take on the 3rd-ranked Wildcats. And Tennessee, Harrison, stones is my word of the weekend for Tennessee, because it took some stones to go on the road. Kentucky had record crowds, by the way. Hashtag grow the game. We love to see that.
Grow the game.
Record crowds in Lexington. And all Tennessee did was break the hearts of Big Blue Nation. And by the way, bouncing back in that series, they lose game 1-5-3, win games 2 and 3, 9-4, and then a thriller in game 3, 13-11. Harrison, this was the series of the weekend. I mean, again, it's hard to believe from the standpoint of, if I told you that Tennessee-Kentucky was going to be a top 5 matchup, you might have believed half of that statement. But of course, what the Wildcats have done this season, nobody saw coming. But your immediate thoughts and reactions to Tennessee going on the road in what appeared to be a really hostile environment and being able to take 2 of 3.
Yeah, Chris, it was huge. I mean, we can't say enough how big it is. No matter what team it is in the country, you're going on the road against a top 3 team in the nation. And Kentucky's been the story of the SEC. You can easily say it, coming in with only one SEC loss. Weirdly enough, it's to Missouri of all teams. But Tennessee, I mean, they came in, everyone's hyping up Kentucky, and for rightfully so, great reason. And this Tennessee team is no slouch at all. I mean, they have been fantastic the past few years. They had the number one run differential in the NCAA, and they went in and quieted that crowd at Kentucky Proud Park and came back home to Knoxville with a massive, massive series win.
And you look at game 1-2, Harrison. I mean, Tennessee could have very easily swept that series, right? Not to take anything away from Kentucky, obviously, but Kentucky, or Vols, blew that late lead in that game. Kentucky had a 3-run 7th inning. Billy Amick with a costly error in that one. I mean, outside of that, the weekend win, it felt like pretty smoothly for the Vols. I mean, you look at what they did in game 2. Dominic Niemann couldn't even get out of the first inning, gave up 4 earned runs, and that one just 20 pitches. We got to talk about, by the way, and I think I just saw him today named to some sort of National Player of the Week award. How about Christian Moore? This dude can't get out right now. This dude cannot get out. I think over the last week, he's got like 9 hits, 4 home runs, like 3 doubles. It's absolutely insane. So again, all in all, and I tell you this, Harrison, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself because I know we're going to talk end of show, our boldest takes or what have you, but I feel like Tennessee has been the most under-talked about and underappreciated contender in the SEC. Like, it feels like to me Tennessee's had a very quiet season. You know what I mean? Like, we've spent a lot of time talking about the disappointments in LSU and Florida. We've spent a lot of time talking about Texas A&M, about Arkansas, about Kentucky, and deservedly so. And Tennessee's just kind of been there. You know what I mean? And like, they just continue to take care of their business. It's not the Tennessee of 2 years ago where it was really flashy and sexy and a lot of trash talk and they had the best record in college baseball. But like, this Tennessee team is for real, man. This Tennessee team is legit, and they're going to be a force in the postseason.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, you said it's definitely a different style of Tennessee team than the flashy, kind of loud, just energetic teams that they've had in the past and how the hype they've had. I mean, they still have a lot of hype, but it's definitely kind of been under the radar, I think, a lot so because of some other teams that have either been star-studded and prospect-studded above them, like in Arkansas and Hagan Smith, or just a Kentucky and their season that they've had with what people had expectations for them coming into the year. But yeah, I mean, the lineup's loaded again this year, headlined by Christian Moore in the leadoff spot, who had his 43rd home run in game two in his career at Tennessee. And him and Blake Burke have been going back and forth all season. I've heard from sources that they're calling it the Sosa McGuire home run chase at Tennessee for the career home run record, per sources. And it's been exciting to watch. They went back to back in one of the games, and it was, I mean, just so much power up and down lineup. I mean, you can kind of compare Christian Moore to a Ronald Acuna, dare I say. I mean, just the power he has, the leadoff spot, just how he plays the game. I mean, he's a fast kid on the base path. I mean, he sets a tone for that lineup for sure.
And mentioning, by the way, the back-to-back home runs in Game 3, Christian Moore in that ball game, by the way, he tied a single-game program record with 3 home runs, had homers in the 3rd, the 7th, and the 8th innings. I mean, this dude was on fire all weekend. He's been on fire what feels like all season, certainly the last week or so of the season. You know, on the Kentucky side, Harrison, before we get off this, let's take nothing away from the Wildcats. Tough loss. You hate to lose this series on your home field. But this Kentucky team, I think they're still legit. They're still right there top of the SEC East, by the way. But this weekend, I don't think, because I think some were looking at the schedule. The schedule's not very good. And I think the Cats, by the way, have got a lot to prove this weekend when they go to Columbia, South Carolina. Like, how do you erase that nasty taste in your mouth that is losing to Tennessee? You go on the road in the SEC, and you take 2 of 3, if not sweep, a quality opponent. But I think Kentucky's still legit. You look at them across the board. How about Ryan Walschmidt for them? 7 of 13, 2 doubles, 2 homers in that series. I think they're going to be fine. I think, Harrison, my biggest takeaway from this series, Kentucky's going to be just fine. Tennessee is stacked still. They're still a Tony Vitello club, but certainly make no mistake, I think Kentucky – this takes nothing away from what they've done to this point.
Yeah, Chris, absolutely. And my biggest question and what I was looking for coming into the series was, how does the Kentucky pitching fare against this stout, mature, powerful up and down the lineup of the Tennessee Volunteers? And that was, I think, where Tennessee had the edge going in and where they came out on top, because the bats for Kentucky, they swung it really well. Nick Lopez, being right, you said Ryan Walschmidt. I mean, they had plenty of guys that played very well and hit very well, a lot of mature at-bats with a lot of power. I mean, I think a lot of people are surprised with how much power they had, because it's kind of a quieter, it's not a big headline name team. And what their kind of forte is sound defensively. Even though they had 3 errors in this series, they steal a lot of bags, which they didn't do in this series. And, I mean, they just kind of got a hit is the way I saw it, the way it kind of unfolded. But, I mean, those games I mentioned, and Ryan Nicholson, I mean, they have a lot of power. They got, I think, 6 of their – starting 9 guys that qualify plate appearance wise are batting over 300. And you got Nick Lopez batting 390 with over 1,000 OPS. I mean, the hitting's not the question. It's just the pitching. And like you said, Dominic Niemann couldn't get out of the first inning. He struggled to get 5 runs and just, he just had a short leash. And I don't think it was a terrible thing, because that's a game you want to win for sure. But that's going to be how determines how far they go. Is their pitching, and it all starts with the starting pitching.
And Harrison, looking ahead for both these clubs, we've got the next 2 series listed for them. Tennessee's got a great chance to build some momentum. They got Missouri upcoming at home this weekend. The following weekend, they're at Florida. Of course, we know Tennessee-Florida is always a really fun one, no matter what the sport is, a great rivalry. It's going to be fun when those 2 play. Kentucky, I think, Harrison, this is where I'm curious to see how Kentucky responds. And I tell you what, if they can get through these next 2 weekends, certainly with a pair of series wins, because they got South Carolina on the road and then Arkansas on the home field. But you get through these next 2 weekends 3-3. Like, I think that's all you really have to do if you're Kentucky.
Yeah.
Because they still lead in the SEC East by 3 games. And I know winning the division, it's not the end-all, be-all, right? Sometimes the team that finishes 4th or 5th, they go the furthest in the postseason. But certainly when you're in this point, 15-3 in conference, 32-7 overall, again, it's still a 3-game lead over second place Tennessee, who sits at 12-6, even after losing 2 of 3 to the Volunteers. I think these next 2 weekends, they're going to tell us a lot about this Kentucky ball club. So excited to see how they respond over the next couple weekends.
Absolutely. And same, I mean, Tennessee, I think they can't take this next week for granted lightly, you know, because, I mean, Missouri's been playing a lot better recently. Now, had a really good season. Kerry Jackson's led that team to a really good season so far, more than what people expected. So hopefully Tennessee doesn't kind of sleepwalk into that, especially at home. But, I mean, again, shout out to Christian Moore and Blake Burke. I'm going to go ahead and say it, they have the best 1-2 in the order in the SEC right now. I'm going to go ahead and say it.
I don't think that's too bold of a statement either when you look at the production they put up. Let's go to our next series, Texas A&M taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide, the number one Aggies. By the way, the question was always, how are they going to respond, right? How's Jim Schlossnagel's club going to respond to being number one in the country and maybe some of the added pressure that that brings? No problem, at least so far. This was a series that was weather affected, right? Games 1 and 2 were in a doubleheader. And Harrison, a really interesting series because Texas A&M, it looked like they might have been in trouble. Bama jumps out to a big 5-0 lead. 10 unanswered runs for A&M in just 2-inning span, by the way. Then you look at game 2, and the offensive explosion really starts. 18 runs on 18 hits for the Texas A&M lineup. Of course, Alabama able to salvage that game 3. They lose 2 of 3 in this one, but I think you look at this, Harrison. I mean, again, we praised Texas A&M all week last week, which deservedly so. They still deserve that and more, but the offense continues to impress. You talk about best lineups in the SEC. You could convince me very easily that Texas A&M 1-9 is the most lethal lineup in this conference.
Yeah, Chris, and you took the words literally right out of my mouth. I was about to say, when you speak about stacked lineups at Tennessee, you can't finish that sentence without talking about the Texas A&M Aggies. That's for sure. I mean, up and down. It's another mature lineup that I have no problem saying it's one of the best lineups, if not the best lineup in the SEC. And the power is up and down the lineup too. It's not just their power guys on lineups. Everyone up now the order can hit and hit for power, and that carries a long way in the SEC and a long way in the postseason. I mean, it's headlined by Braden Montgomery, who had a 444 foot home run and a 300 home run game 1. I mean, he leads that charge as well. And then you got Jace Laviolette, Hayden Shaw, just these huge guys and huge role players for them that's just consistently producing at this high level. I mean, they combined in the game 2 of the doubleheader. They each had a home run. They each had 4 RBIs, and they had 12 of the 18 RBIs, just 3 guys. I mean, they have more home runs and RBIs than other teams. Players and teams as a whole in games. It's unreal. And they did a lot of damage, just those 3, let alone the whole lineup, to Alabama pitching.
Yeah, I mean, Jace Laviolette, Braden Montgomery, Harrison, a great place to start. You know, we got in our notes here, obviously, Jace Laviolette becoming the first player in program history to reach 20 homers in back-to-back seasons. And A&M's got a pretty good baseball history and tradition. So for Jace Laviolette to become the first player ever to do that, it's saying something. I mean, it really is. Also for Texas A&M, 5 consecutive series wins against ranked opponents off their best start in program history, 13-5 in conference. Certainly, the good times are rolling in College Station for Alabama. It's, you know, we talked about this Bama club all preseason, all throughout the season. Everything, it's all going to come back to them. They're pitching, right? They're going to be a solid hitting club, but they need those power arms to come through. We saw some chinks in the armor in regards to the bullpen early in this series. Ben Hess continues to struggle. You just got to get those things shored up, bottom line, especially your bullpen, right? I mean, you got to be solid across the board, but man, if you've got a faulty bullpen, you're going to get exposed weekend in, weekend out in the SEC.
Yeah, and 100%, but it's also tough when you're having to roll that bullpen out for a lot of innings over the weekend and cover a lot. It adds up throughout the season, let alone a series, and it just puts a lot of pressure on them because when you have starters like Ben Hess, who's been struggling a lot recently, a lot of fastballs up, and just I don't think he's tipping any pitches. Just he's not getting in adverse counts and putting guys away early. And a lot of guys, I think, seeing maybe his off-speed stuff and laying off it or seeing it up, it puts the bullpen in a tough situation. And you can't do that more than one game a series in the SEC. So it's not a recipe for success, that's for sure. But, I mean, the A&M lineup is one of the hardest to face in the SEC. And you got I mean, you got just the whole lineup stacked. I mean, we could go up and down the whole lineup if we want to right now. I mean, it's that legit, and it's a lot of names that people know, a lot of names that people don't know. I mean, Jackson Appel, he's got a 23 game on base streak, 12 game hit streak. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, Ali Camarillo's got a 25 game on base streak. Ray Montgomery, 22 game on base streak. It's ridiculous. I mean, that's just how consistently good they are week in and week out in the SEC of all conferences.
And Haberson, you look what's next for A&M and Bama. A&M's got Georgia at home in College Station, then at LSU in a few weeks, which admittedly that series looked a lot more interesting a couple months ago when we were looking at the schedule, but either way, still Baton Rouge, tough place to play. But Alabama, you know, I think what's interesting, Harrison, they are 7-11 right now in conference play, 7-11, sitting fourth in the SEC West. And this was a Bama team that, you know, there were mixed feelings on, I think, in the preseason, obviously year one of Rob Vaughn. Their next two weekends, they are at Ole Miss and at Mississippi State. And with the way those two teams are playing, those are going to be two really hostile environments. And it feels like, Harrison, for Bama, the season's going to go one way or another potentially, depending on how those two weekends go. So, and what's cool, too, is there's a log jam in the SEC West with State, then it's Bama, then it's Ole Miss. So certainly we're going to get a shakeup in those standings, in those rankings, if you will. But for Bama, you know, not that they haven't to this point, but you got to cut it on. You got to turn it on, because going on the road to the SEC, you got to find a way to minimum survive, right? You got to find a way to survive. Salvage at least one of those two series, and certainly again facing Ole Miss and State next 2 weeks, going to be very, very interesting for Rob.
Yeah, Chris, one thing about going back to the end of this series, I mean, I think it's huge for Alabama to take game three. I mean, it's not get swept at home. Every game in the SEC matters. I mean, this is the third win against the number one team in the country, and the number one team has been twice, Arkansas and now A&M. They're pitching a struggle, but if you look at this series, I think something that's been really overshadowed, and I don't think people are going to really see with how stacked this lineup is, how many runs and hits they put up, is the struggles that the A&M pitching staff had this week. And I mean, you look at Tanner Jones, you look four innings, get five earned runs, one strikeout. I mean, then you go to Sunday and you look at the struggles they had there. I mean, if Justin Lampkin only went, he didn't go two innings, five earned runs. I mean, it's definitely overshadowed. And I think that's should raise some eyebrows and some concerns. Ryan Prager only went three innings. I mean, seven Ks and you get four runs. I think those things are something to keep an eye out and see how they kind of adapt and what they tweak. You know, Max Wiener just been such a great pitching coach at A&M, has really done a fantastic job at the staff this year. But I'm really, really going to focus on that next week, I think, against another really good lineup in Georgia and Charlie Condon. So keep an eye on for that.
Harrison, let's go to Columbia, South Carolina, the series between the Arkansas Razorbacks, the second-ranked Arkansas Razorbacks, and the 20th-ranked South Carolina Gamecocks. Arkansas takes 2 of 3. I think this series was, dare I say, a little bit more competitive than I think some of us expected, from the standpoint of, like, South Carolina very well could have won this series. I mean, it's
absolutely,
you know, I think most expected the Hogs to find a way to at minimum take 2 of 3. But, I mean, you know, South Carolina was right there. They lose game one. Of course, Hagan Smith pitches in this ball game. They lose that game 2-1. Then win game 2, 6-3. Of course, there was a doubleheader on Saturday. Win game 2, 6-3, but then lose game 3, 9-6. So all three of these games really tightly contested. I mean, again, when you almost beat Hagan Smith, you're playing some pretty good baseball. And oh, by the way, Hagan Smith still 6 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 earned, 11 strikeouts. Did have 5 walks in this game, which was a little bit uncharacteristic of him, but still, even when he's not great, he's still fantastic, right? Roman Kimball.
Definitely uncharacteristic.
Roman Kimball gets the start in game one. You know, it turned into a bullpen game for South Carolina. Ty Good, Chris Veach, Marlott, McCoy at the end there pitched really, really well. But, of course, Arkansas, they do what they do best. When Hagan Smith takes the bump, they win the ball game. Eli Jones getting that start in game two, he was really good for them. South Carolina, obviously patient at the plate in game two, able to steal that one. And then game three, of course, they fall. But the big number, Haberson, from this weekend, right? Because you and I talked off air, and I'll say it here yet again, and I've said it many times over the last couple weeks, this Gamecocks ball club, they're doing their same song and dance under Mark Kingston, right? It's like the carrot dangling in front of your face, right? You can never quite get there. And there was a quote from Mark Kingston after this series this weekend where he said, we're getting close. And Harrison, I went and did my due diligence. And I looked up and I said, when other times, because I feel like I've heard this before, have there been other times that Mark Kingston said, we're getting close? Found damn near the same exact quote in 2021, 2022, 2023. It's the same thing year after year after year, where there is this ceiling they just can't break through for whatever reason with Mark Kingston at the helm. It doesn't mean they're a terrible ball club either, but they're sitting, what did I tell you? 34 to 36 wins. They're going to be right at 500 in SEC play. They are
14 to 16 or 16 to 14. Yeah.
They are literally at 9-9 in conference play as we speak, with what, 4 weekends to go, which again is not a record to turn your nose up at, but it just is what it is, what it is. But the number, Harrison, that jumps out, and we saw this last year with South Carolina, when this guy is hot, they win. When he's not, they don't. It's really that simple. And that man is Ethan Petrie. He goes 0 for 12, 6 strikeouts in this series. This kind of reminds me, Harrison, folks probably won't remember this, but you and I will, the series a couple years ago, South Carolina, Florida, where I forget the hitter's name for Florida, but he went like 0 for 15 that weekend with like 11 strikeouts. It's kind of that weekend. I forget his name. Very high draft pick, by the way. Very, very high.
Judge Fabian?
Fabian, yes. I was about to say, I can see him in my head, but I cannot think
of
his
name. Reds, yep.
It reminded me of that type of weekend. Either way, though, your thoughts, Arkansas, give them credit, goes on the road, gets a huge series victory, winning 2 of 3. And South Carolina, they do just enough to make you believe that they can challenge the upper echelons, but then they do things at the same time in the same weekend that make you go, they're just not quite there.
Yeah, Chris, it 100%. I got a couple points definitely want to hit. 8 quality starts when Hagan Smith is pitching. They are 10-0 in his starts, if that's a shocker to you. I mean, probably the best pitcher in the SEC, one of the highest prospects in the upcoming 2024 MLB draft, according to Kyle McDaniel. And to lose a game 2-1 to him and they have a chance to win that game, that's huge. I mean, I was really, really impressed with that, especially Roman Kimbrell, him starting. That was, I don't know if that was just a kind of a flip the script to kind of go against Hagan Smith and throw Eli Jones in game 2. I think that's more of what it was. But like you said, the bullpen of those guys really, really kind of shut it down. I mean, if you consider the whole thing a bullpen game, 9 innings, 4 hits, no runs earned, and then 11 Ks, but they had 10 walks. That's the issue. I mean, with the struggles or lack of power and consistency that the Arkansas lineup has, that 10 walks and still only lose 2-1.
Dude, their fan base was griping over the hitting all weekend. Yep. So, they're not a perfect ball club, right? They got issues swinging it.
Yeah, and they left a lot of runners on in game 1 alone, let alone the whole day. They didn't capitalize. And Carolina had a chance to win it late in the game, too. I mean, the Eli Jones, a little shorter start, 4 innings, 7 hits, 1 earned, only 3 Ks, but he pitched really well. And the Gamecock backs, like you said, were patient. They hit a lot of hitter's pitches against Mason Luna, who didn't have his best stuff, only 3 1/3, 70 pitches, 3 Ks, 7 walks.
Seven walks is crazy.
Yeah, for an Arkansas pitcher, let alone Mason Molina's caliber talent in the arsenal that he has. And Ethan Petrie, I think it was game 3, if I'm remembering correctly, they intentionally walked Cole Messina to pitch to Ethan Petrie. That's the kind of weekend he was having. And so, I mean, it's just And the Gamecocks, without him, had a chance to win this series. And they hit Will McIntyre, one of the best relievers in the SEC. I mean, they can put up 3 runs against him in 2 innings. I mean, just opportunity after opportunity, they didn't capitalize. I think the pitching, I think you have to give the Gamecock staff some credit with how they performed on the mound, but also how they kind of strategically managed it. They gave themselves a chance all weekend to win it. Just they didn't have those clutch hits when they needed to, and they didn't have those clutch put-away outs on the defensive pitching side when they needed to. And that's those little things are what determine series.
And this is the second time, Harrison, that I can recall defense being at the top of our list of things that cost South Carolina an SEC weekend. And it's just, to be an elite club, you just can't have those lapses. Those lapses in concentration, because it's not a physical mistake, it's a mental mistake. Because it's
one of the best
made 1,000 times.
Yeah, one of the best teams in the SEC, if not the best, I guess you can say, Kentucky, one of the most sound defenses in the SEC. I mean, correlation? I think so. Yeah. I mean, But Arkansas comes out with their 4th consecutive regular season series win versus the Gamecocks. They haven't lost a series to South Carolina since 2016. So,
yeah,
I mean, be at it what you will.
Pre-Mark Kingston. Play. That was pre-Mark Kingston as well.
So yeah.
The year before Kingston got there. Also, 14-4 in SEC play, second time in program history. That was 99, and they won the SEC championship that year. Arkansas, what coming? They got the Florida Gators at home this weekend and at Kentucky. That'll be a really fun one. South Carolina has Kentucky coming to town this weekend and at Missouri. Feels like a big weekend for South Carolina, especially with at Mizzou the following weekend. You can start to build some momentum. I think you're going to have Georgia after that, and then you finish the regular season at Tennessee. But, you know, the series on your home field, Haberson, they feel like series you really need to get. And so after you lose two of three to whether it's Arkansas or if it's Mizzou or whoever it is, how do you bounce back? That'll be the big question. But, certainly a lot of questions to answer for the Gamecocks. And, again, for Arkansas, the good times continue to roll. And they got a big bounce back win after dropping two of three, I think it was last weekend.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Unified Healing. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. No matter where you are, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/SEC to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/SEC. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. So, as we move on a pack slate, Florida took on the Vanderbilt Commodores. And Harrison, what I'm going to stop doing, I'm going to stop picking Florida to win. By the way, shout out to you because last weekend's picks, a perfect sweep, 7-0 on the weekend. When it came to picking series, I went 4-3, 7-0, my friend. A golf clap for you, a pat on the back. That was wildly, wildly impressive. So again, you picked the Vanderbilt Commodores here, and Vandy took care of the business, winning 2 of 3, winning games 1 and 2. Florida salvages game 3, winning that one 6-2. It was very Vandy baseball, right? 10-5, 5-2, 6-2, those type of scores. Your overall thoughts on this one, Haberson? Again, I think Vanderbilt's kind of a club because of their inconsistencies. Again, they're another one that I don't know that we talk about quite as much, right? They're 10-8 in conference. So, you know, they're hot one weekend, cold the next. I mean, Harrison, I can't tell you how many times I've bought and sold stock on Vandy and gone back and forth on them. But, you know, the Florida Gators are down. It's still a big series victory. You know, I'm sure we can continue to beat a dead gator at this point if we really want to. But on the Vandy side, what impressed you so much about the Doors getting the job done?
Shout out to Vandy boys helping with the sweep of the weekend. Our first sweep, I think, of the pick'em. So I'm going to take all the props for that, for sure. The research, the analytics we put in, the results, the proofs in the pudding. You know, we love to see it. We love to see it. I mean, you just got to stop picking Florida, I think, especially SEC on the road. But, I mean, I respect the pick. You know, you can't go wrong with an upset pick in the SEC. You love to see it. You don't want to be the guy that picks every, you know, you don't pick chalk, but anyone can beat anyone in the SEC. We talk about it every week. So, but yeah, what impressed me about Vanderbilt the most was just, I mean, I think pitching to kind of limit as much as possible this stacked Florida lineup. I mean, we talk about the inconsistencies that Florida has, but they also have one of the most stacked and powerful lineups up and down in the SEC. When they're hot, they're one of the hardest teams to get out, let alone not like prevent from scoring runs. So Bryce Cunningham in game one did a fantastic job of that, I think. He gave it 3 runs, but I mean, he looked a lot more dominant than the stat line. Fastball jumped out of his hand. He was spotting it up all over. Most of his strikeouts were this fastball. And then, I mean, Carter Holton, I mean, I wrote an article midseason rankings. He's number 2 in my midseason rankings of starting pitchers in the SEC. With 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 10 Ks, no walks. He was locked in, locked in. I mean, his fastball mid 90s, jumping out of the hand as well. I mean, pitching at home helps for sure. His mid-80s breaking ball is sharp. He was spotting that up all over. He was just in his bag, and it was awesome to see. And it kind of led the way for the Vanderbilt offense to kind of do their thing. All right, we got a stud on the mound game one. We got a stud on the mound game two. Let's give it to the boys to, you know, RJ Austin to just go have a day, have a weekend. I mean, he almost hit for the cycle in one game. He was a home run short of the cycle in one game. So, I mean, it starts with the mound with them, I think, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, that's typical Vandy baseball, right? It always starts on the mound. It's like a pitching factory there. We talk about pitching labs and stuff like that. I feel like Vandy was probably the originator of whatever lab it takes to build an MLB pitcher. They seem to have it there.
The amount of MLB pitchers they have is ridiculous.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. You know, in the midst of a really difficult season, Jack Caglione continues to be fantastic, whether it's swinging the stick at his 22nd home run in that first game. Game two, he had his ninth straight game with a home run, which tied the NCAA
ninth
record.
Straight.
Which, and by the way, on a side note, I loved seeing, I guess it was in game three, where it was Jack Caglione's final at bat. It was
top
to
of the
extend,
ninth. They
yeah,
walk
what
him.
Extend the streak and they walk him. Do you have an issue with that? I don't. It's not Vandy's responsibility to make sure he has a quote unquote fair shake. He had like four at bats before that. Like, it's
no,
not,
I don't have an issue with it.
I see it from the Vandy perspective. Like, we don't give a damn if this thing gets extended. We don't want it extended against us. Like, we don't owe it to you. So
you don't want your name in the record book as the team
no.
to set the new record. Yeah, I have no
right.
problem with that. I mean, if you're on the mound, you want to be like, I want to be that guy that goes strikes him out top of the ninth. But I mean, situational wise, it made sense for sure. I mean, why pitch him if you don't have to? So yeah. Florida fans, be mad all you want. I completely understand, but it's a game of baseball. He had plenty of other opportunities early in the game to do it, to do a feat that is insane to even think of. I mean, as hard as it is to get nine consecutive game hit streak, let alone nine straight games with a home run on, I mean, a quote he said, I love hitting lefties. I love lefties. Game two, he got a 2-0 fat or 2-0 hanging slider that was flipped in there from Carter Holton, probably his worst pitch of the day. And he mashed it, home run oppo. It was unreal. I mean, 15 of his 23 home runs are against lefties. I mean, as a lefty-lefty matchup, to see a lefty that well, that's a special talent right there. Not something you see every day at the college level, let alone professional level. So even more props to that in him and the power and just the hitability he has and why he's projected so high.
And he was fantastic on the bump in game three as well. Five innings pitch, two earned runs. Whenever he takes the mound, they seem to win. I think Florida's only wish right now is they could clone him two more times, and maybe that would help them out.
Keep him in that Sunday role. You have to.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point you have to. I was going to mention, though, we had a – you don't see this very often. We had a pitcher rejection for a foreign substance on the forearm. That was J.D. Thompson. Of Vanderbilt. Yeah. So
and he was pitching really well leading up to that for sure. I mean,
no kidding.
He was shoving it. I mean,
no
six
kidding.
K's and just over three innings, only one earned run. I mean, he was shoving. So to have that situation kind of happen, it was really weird how it happened. Kevin O'Sullivan in Florida seemed kind of confused and like kind of initiated, but then you see the Vanderbilt dug up and like, all right, like what's going on? And want to get, you know, more information and whether he actually had anything or not. I mean, it was obvious he kind of went to his glove side, his right wrist, because he's lefty. And then he kind of looks like he wiped it off on his belt or kind of pulled his, kind of readjusted his pants. Interesting situation. I'm wondering kind of what kind of resolves kind of comes out from that. But it was cool to watch the pitch. He was fun to watch. I mean, I haven't seen him pitch much this season at all, but he's got some good stuff. That's for sure. Electric arsenal.
And upcoming over the next couple weeks for Vandy and Florida, Vandy got Mississippi State and then at Georgia, Florida, at Arkansas, and then Tennessee in Gainesville. So it gets no easier for the Florida Gators, who are just really hanging on for dear life for their postseason odds. 20-19 overall, 8-10 in the conference right now.
But hey, picking up that win in game three, another huge win on the road.
It's huge to avoid the sweep. It's huge to avoid the sweep.
Alex Shelnut led that way. He carried the team in game three, but also in game three, shout out to David Diaz. I mean, his name was called, I feel like, every other inning. It felt like the whole series, let alone game three. I mean, he had two, I think they were back to back, if not the same inning, insanely high level defensive plays that you see like only a Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado, Austin Riley kind of make it third. It was gross in the field. I mean, just gold glove caliber weekend for him, I believe. And he was hitting the ball well too. So shout out to him. Alan Espinal played fantastic as well. He was, I mean, his name was called every game, felt like too. So a lot to be happy for a lot of to take away in a positive way for the Andy boys.
Harrison, let's move to the Georgia Bulldogs, who took on Ole Miss, 24th ranked Georgia. They win 2 of 3. I'm just going to give you the stage here because I could do it, but I'm going to allow you to spend a couple minutes just talking about how fantastic Charlie Condon is, because that's what it's about when it comes to Georgia. There's other nice pieces, don't get me wrong, but this is the Charlie Condon show we are tuned into.
Yeah. I mean, it's – and we're going to see him – we're going to see him next week too. And I mean, I'm going to hopefully try to watch a lot more of that. I mean, it's just, he's such a special talent. I mean, he's just climbed up the rankings all season long, and just the power he has. We talked about how he was, I believe, a preferred walk-on. Redshirts his freshman year, a lot of development, a lot of growth. And he's just really exploding the scene. I mean, he does it week in and week out, which is the most impressive thing. We talk about Jack Caglione doing it week in, week out on the mound and at the box. I mean, I think he's, I don't want to say getting overshadowed by Jack, but I mean, I think it's a two-leg race for the Golden Spikes right now, I think for sure.
Georgia, by the way, they are 24-3 on their home field. So
Georgia has the highest OPS in the league too.
People don't give a – yeah, people don't give a lot of respect to Foley Field in regards to what it is as an environment, but Georgia has been very, very tough to beat in Athens. And again, Ole Miss felt that. Ole Miss, who's an improved club this year, but you know, certainly it's fun to watch, Harrison, as we look at these series. You know, teams that are fighting for their postseason lives. Georgia sitting at 500 in league play. Ole Miss is at 6-12. Certainly, they needed to take 2 of 3, or they probably need to win out in regards to series. Get that magic. You know, 13-17 is where you have a realistic shot. You'd like to get to 14 conference wins. If you're at 12 going into Hoover, you need to win probably at least 2, maybe 3 games to make a real case. So it's fun to watch these. I don't want to call them – I don't know if desperate ball clubs is the right word, but just you can feel the intensity picking up a lot on the line in Georgia, of course, again, protecting the home field. And they were fantastic over the weekend, and again, led by Charlie Condon. But the job Wes Johnson has done, the new head coach, I mean, it's just – you can't say enough good things about the job he has done to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic job he's done, and just what he brings to a new SEC team, and just how quickly they're benefiting on all sides of the ball. And we didn't expect them to, you know, be one of the top kind of third echelon teams in the SEC, but I mean, they're another team that you can't go into Athens, let alone like face Georgia, and think you're going to, you know, take 2 or 3 or sweep. I mean, they're just another really crafty, just hard fought club that is going to give you a really tough game every week, every week in series and every game. I mean, it's similar to South Carolina's club, but I think a little bit more power, similar issues on the mound, but I mean, just not an easy weekend against Athens. That's against Georgia in Athens for sure. But Wes Johnson is just, I mean, just wait till he goes in 2 years, see what he's doing. I mean, he might be leading the SEC with this Georgia Bulldogs club. I wouldn't be surprised. You shouldn't either.
Would not be surprised at all. Harrison, let's move to LSU, who went to Columbia, Missouri. And Harrison, it is Monday, April the 22nd at the time of us recording this, and we are talking about LSU, the defending national champs, winning their first SEC series of the season. My friend, we are 6 weekends in. LSU just won their first SEC series of the year. Better late than never, but never late is better, as some like to say. But either way, LSU finds a way to get the job done. The Bayou Bengals, because of winning 2 of 3, they improve. Oh, man, this hurts coming out. 5-13 in the conference. You know, I guess, you know, it's something to feel good about. But I hate to say, Harrison, that it feels like the season's lost for them. But We're really close to that. Like we're really, really close to these weekends not mattering all that much anymore for them. Like and like the fact you couldn't even sweep, all due respect to Mizzou, like the fact you couldn't get the sweep, kind of a missed opportunity to a degree, but
it was one when you definitely needed to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, congrats on the Bayou Bengals for finally finding a way to beat an SEC team 2 out of 3. So
yeah, I mean, especially you win game 1-12-1 in 7 innings. You go in there rolling hot, right? And just the expectation you have and what you need to do. Gage jumped game one. He pitched game one instead of Luke Coleman. He goes a CG, three hitter, only 11, one run, 14 Ks. I mean, he was dealing. Everything was on for him, spotting up everything really well, only one walk. I mean, he just commanded the game from the jump, pun intended. And no, he didn't look back. But then to have Luke Coleman go in game two, and you're feeling comfortable. I mean, this LSU team, with the history that they have, the program prestige, coming off national championship, to do that and have your Friday night guy, you know, and Luke Coleman, even though he pitched game two in this series, going in game two and you end up losing 8-7. He goes 4 2/3, 6 hits, 5 runs. I mean, just that is, it just hurts to say. It hurts to watch. You know,
does LSU have a quick trigger and make a change at pitching coach after the season? Their pitching staff is a nightmare.
I think you don't just do a one and done with Nate Yeski. I mean, I think you definitely sit down, you break it down, you know, you kind of look at the blueprints, see what happens, see what we need to fix. You're obviously going to get some new guys and new pieces. And I don't think you go one and done. I'm not a believer in one and done in any sport with any coach. You see it happen in football, more short leashes, basketball as well. Baseball, I mean, because you got to get your guys in, you got to recruit, transfer portal. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity to flip scripts quicker with the transfer portal and the players and how they change throughout the year. You know, you have a lot of guys that develop from their freshman year to their sophomore year or make that, you know, sophomore junior jump leadership. I don't think so. No, I would be shocked if they made a change.
I don't think they make one either, but I just wanted to ask you. But either way, it has been a nightmare season for LSU across the board, on the mound, swinging the stick, whatever it might be. But again, you finally have something to feel good about. So maybe, just maybe, LSU is a ball club with the talent they have. Still, we know they have talent. You get a little bit of momentum. Maybe you can build off of it. But
maybe you switch it up and you throw Griffin Herring in a Sunday roll. I mean, or a Saturday roll, even, I guess. Well, you kick Gage jump, I think, traditionally Saturday roll. But Griffin Herring, Sunday roll, I mean, he came out of relief after Nate Ackenhouse, went 5 innings, 1 hit, 8 Ks, 1 walk. I mean, give him a Sunday opportunity. Why not? I mean, at this point, I don't want to say what do you have to lose, but you got a lot to gain. So
you're running out of opportunities. Let's just put it that way. You're running out of opportunities.
He's been fantastic all season. He usually comes in and does a long relief after Luke Coleman. But, I mean, I would like to see him in a Sunday roll opportunity. Give him a shot. So I'm 2 for 2 on giving relievers, put him in the starting rotation this year. Just going to say that now. I'm 2 for 2, and they've worked out really well.
Just listen to Harrison. He knows. He'll dial it up. Final series of the weekend, Harrison, Mississippi State. How about the clean sweep of the Auburn Tigers? A tale of two seasons, right? Mississippi State, who has been one of the best surprises, I think, now sitting 10-8 in conference play. And, you know, after the really rough year they had the past two seasons, yours truly calling for Chris Lemonis to get canned. They've turned it around, had a really nice season thus far. Auburn, I mean, I was high on Butch Thompson's club, thought they'd surprise. Not even close. They are 2-16 in the conference at this point. But the Mississippi State Bulldogs, that is the big story at the Dude. The Dude is becoming a feared place to play again, Harrison, which we love to see. Shout out.
The Dude is always a feared place to play.
It is, but I get that. No, it is. I get that. But when you're winning, it takes it to another level. And that's what State's doing. The pitching was fantastic. They win 8-1, 3-1, 4-3. I think I saw the both-handed pitcher. I think he hit like 98 from the right side this weekend, which is
Gerangelo Sinjin.
Yeah, Sinjin was
remember
insane.
The name. Don't try
he
to
was
spell
insane.
It, remember
Dude,
the name.
He's going to be like one of the biggest talking points for State when they make the postseason, whether they're hosting a regional, in a regional. Like, there's 110%, mark this down, there's going to be some piece done on him. Maybe it takes them getting to the super round, but like, there's going to be some feature on this kid. Because of what he presents, the problems. Harrison, your thoughts on Mississippi State? I know you got a soft spot for the folks in Starkville. Great weekend. I mean, an ideal weekend. You want to take advantage of a struggling Auburn club. They did just that. And all of a sudden, you know, Mississippi State, I think, is putting themselves not just in great position to make the postseason. That's a given. But they're putting themselves in the hosting conversation, which, again, hosting a regional and the Dude. I mean, it goes together. Like, that's the most American thing. That's right up there with hot dogs and apple pie. You know what I mean? Like, postseason baseball hosted at the Dude, nothing better.
Hold on. Hot dogs and apple pie?
Apple pie, man. It's American as that, man. That's what we have to hang our hat on.
I was going to say maybe just a hot dog at a ball game, but, or, you know, Cracker Jacks or some peanuts, you know, just all over the Florida baseball
game. Apple pie.
I did it Sunday night. I'll be honest.
Bro, pie's as American as it gets, man. No matter what kind of pie you prefer.
Yeah. But no, I mean, if you want to talk about hosting a regional, I didn't mention it earlier, but Florida is still projected to host a regional, if you can believe that or not, which is just shocking to think about.
That's insane. Well, I mean, if, you know, they've got opportunities. I mean, they're, what are they, 8-10 in conference? I mean, it's possible, but yeah. I don't know. It's a lot of belief in the Gators. That's a lot of belief.
I mean, they could do it and go 4-0 and sweep the regional, or they could go, you know, 2-Q.
We're getting off on a side note, but that's the weird thing about this year is, like, Florida and LSU have both been dumpster fires, it feels like, all year. Both of those teams are capable of winning the SEC tournament, Hoover. Both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but to go back to Mississippi State, I mean, Crystal Metis has done a fantastic job to your despise this season, for sure.
No, listen, I'm happy he turned it around. I'm happy. I didn't want to be right on that, but, you know, I mean, it looked like it was – I mean, did you lose to Austin, PA in the midweek? I mean
– they dropped, what, one or two to Air Force?
The turnaround from that point has been special. It has been special.
And it started with the pitching. I mean, Jarangelis engine, and he pitched game two. I mean, it started with him just six and two-thirds, three hits, one earned. I mean, he didn't only have five strikeouts and three walks. But if you haven't seen him pitch yet, fan people, I'm telling you, you got to watch him pitch. I mean, MLB finally posted and gave him some props to being a both-handed pitcher and how good he is. I mean, let alone probably a lot of people covered in the SEC, Mississippi State, have been hyping him up the past year at least. But Cal Stevens set the tone in game one. I mean, an 8-1 win, the bats went off. But I think you got Cal Stevens going seven innings, spreading out six hits, no earned runs, 11 punchies, two walks. I mean, that's where it starts. You know, you can say the bats, but I think it starts the mound with any team. Maybe I'm pitcher biased, being a former pitcher. But I think the starter pitcher sets the tone for how the game's going to go. And when you got a stud going and he's hot, he's rolling, everything's on, he's dealing, he's dicing, you feel even more comfortable in the box as a hitter. From all my teammates that I've talked to that are playing at various schools, various professional teams, that's the big thing that they talked about. It's just the confidence that they have in their start on the mound loosens them up a little bit at times. Unless you're Christian Moore, just going yah-yah at the gates, you know, I think that really starts the mound and sets the tone.
No doubt, my friend. I mean, Mississippi State, again, a great story this year. I'm excited to see postseason baseball at the Dude yet again. I think it's going to happen. Been a lot of fun. They got a couple big series upcoming.
I might have to make a trip there if they host the regional.
That would be a very, very fun destination indeed.
I'll be back in the outfield seats. You don't have to tell me twice. Don't tip me with a good time, Chris.
Yeah. Mississippi State folks will come, just hook us up with some barbecue. That's all we ask. Or hook us up with whatever's on the grill. We're not picky.
We'll be up with some high fives. I mean, I'm all about the vibes. I'm a big vibes guy in college baseball.
I mean, the vibes for sure, but like they're known for the grills, the food. I mean, I'm just saying, like
the hospitality when I was there is, it's like, oh, try this. We made this. Try this. Like, hey, dude, what do you think of this blueberry sausage? I kid you not, blueberry sausage. You've never had it. You got to go try it. It's going to blow your mind. You're going to be like, I didn't know these things go well together, but they do. And I can't not have it in the future. So go try that if you haven't.
Whoever it was that gave Harrison the blueberry sausage, we're down to come.
Shout out to Mississippi State team managers too. There were some great people when I was there. Great guys. I've heard there's a lot of great guys still there too. So a lot of props to all the team managers. I mean, they do a great job. And I mean, Mississippi State, to go back on kind of on script, they got coming up at Vanderbilt. That won't be an easy series. Then they host Alabama, then at Arkansas. So they've been playing a lot better, even though they dropped a series to Ole Miss.
Tough weekends.
I mean, they end the season with hosting Missouri. So, I mean, if you kind of take, let's say you take the series against Alabama and Missouri, you take one game at Vanderbilt, hopefully maybe one in Arkansas, which sets you up really well for the postseason. So it's going to be interesting to see that.
If you can go 6-6 over your last four weekends, you are hosting. So that's the good news. I mean, can you go 500? That's it. So,
and, hey, maybe your favorite series of the year next weekend, Auburn at LSU.
Sheesh. Wow. Hey, something's got to give.
Something's got to give. And if they go in there and play hot and come out the series win, they host Mississippi State at Missouri and then host Alabama in the baseball diamond version of the Iron Bowl, but a three-game series. So,
love it.
Hey, I mean, what is it? Next season, every team in the SEC makes it to the tournament?
Yes. Yes. So, all 16 of them will be in there. So, Harrison, before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit. We'll hit some random notes here. Stock you are buying or selling after this weekend. It can be buy or sell, but stock you're buying or selling after the sixth weekend of conference play.
Yeah, Chris, I had a tough one with this just because I don't want to, you know, buy. I don't really think you can buy A&M stock. I think just the ceiling, the price is too high and the ceiling's not much higher. You know, if you're looking at a real financial kind of models and stuff, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for Arkansas. It doesn't make sense for Kentucky. So to go a little bit off script, I want to say Mississippi State, but I also want to say Tennessee. Just with kind of the under the radar, one of the best teams in the SEC they've been having in Tennessee, and just how deep they are on the mound, how deep they are in the lineup and the power they have. But in a different aspect, different way, how the season, how that the recency of Mississippi State's been playing and the rest of their season, they had just such a fantastic opportunity to go and potentially host a regional at the Dude where anything can happen, where you want to be playing if you're Mississippi State. So I want to buy a little bit of stock in each. I'm not buying a ton in either one, but a little bit in each. What about you, Chris?
I'm buying stock in Tennessee. The title and the thumbnail that many of you have probably seen in this video, I'm going to echo it. Tennessee is the biggest Omaha contender that nobody's talking about for whatever reason. Nobody's talking about them. Nobody's giving them their love. Even after you beat Kentucky 2-3, people look at it, oh, it's Kentucky. Even though Kentucky's as good as they are, Tennessee is just not getting the respect this year. I really feel that. So I'm buying more.
I think Tony Vitello's fine with that.
Oh, I think so too. I'm just saying. But I'm buying stock in Rocky Top, no doubt. Harrison, your mind, who proved the most? Who was exposed? Biggest takeaway from the weekend?
I don't know if people are going to like this, but I think Kentucky still. I think Tennessee, obviously, won the series and just everything we really both echoed. But I think Kentucky, I think you really proved that they could have gone out and won that series. They proved how good they are in competing against the top talent in the SEC and the country. A lot of people had concerns with the early kind of lighter schedule and how hot of a startup they got because of that. But there's no reason to believe they can't make it to Omaha. They have a great team, great head coach. And they have all the pieces to make it to Omaha. So I think they proved a lot for me. And, you know, I think that's maybe something that's under the radar. I don't think a lot of people are going to be riding with that this week. But Kentucky fans, I think, have a lot to be proud, pun intended, about how they played. And how, I mean, in the rest of the season go forward. So
for me, I would go Kentucky is a really good one, because I think Kentucky to sell a bunch of stock on them is – I think it's wrong. I think Tennessee obviously proved a lot going on the road, took real stones. I'm going to go Georgia. Georgia. Ole Miss is, I mean, they're not great this year, but they are a sneaky good club. This is very easily a series Georgia could have lost, to take 2 of 3. Georgia just keeps that momentum rolling, right? They're doubted every week, weren't expected to do a lot. They keep the momentum rolling. I'm going to say Georgia. They continue to prove something to me, and I think to everybody else as well. So I'll go the Georgia Bulldogs.
They can make a deep run in the SEC tournament for sure.
Yes.
Or they could, yes, you know, make a quick exit and then go to the postseason. But yeah, don't be surprised either way.
Yeah. Harrison, in closing, the midseason Golden Spikes list was released. Tons of SEC players on this list. I'm not going to read through them all. I mean, I feel like the names that matter, Charlie Condon, Jack Caglione, right? I mean, we should mention a Braden Montgomery, right?
Yeah, yep.
Braden Montgomery.
Hagan Smith.
Okay. Yeah,
you Hagan go Smith for sure. Too.
Yeah, yeah. But a long laundry list of SEC players on that list. And, of course, guys, the D1 Baseball Top 25 came out early Monday morning. The top four hailing from the SEC, A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Kentucky. You got Vandy at 11. You've got Georgia at 20, so they slide up. Bama at 23. South Carolina at 24. Harrison, really quickly, your thoughts on the top 25?
I mean,
the SEC is loaded, right?
I mean, each week continues to prove that the SEC is the best conference in college baseball, and it proved even more this week. I mean, yeah. Especially from Kentucky, I think that's a good spot for them. I could have seen them drop to 4 or 5, maybe. But to only go from 3 to 4 when you play a top five team in Tennessee and you play them very, very competitively, even though you're at home, to drop that, I think four or five is a really good spot for them. I believe Oregon State dropped from 5 to 9, if I'm remembering that correctly. And, Florida State goes up a little bit, but I think it's a good spot for a lot of teams, not a ton of movement. I'm not big on overreaction. I can't say that enough. Overreaction in jumping too far up or down in the rankings, or, how Florida State did earlier this season, out of the rankings to 15 or 13, whatever it was. But if you look at it, SEC member next year, Oklahoma is now at number 18. They've been hot recently. So a lot to be happy about, Boomer Sooner. So keep an eye on them. I mean, they're turning the right direction at the right time. Maybe a little hot, cold, hot theory. Big fans of that. Shout out 11.7. The boys there, we love those guys. So, what kind of reactions you got from the top 25?
My biggest reaction is this. We love to talk about the blue bloods, whatever sport it is. We got Kentucky in the top five. We've got Duke, Wake Forest. We've got UC Irvine's up there. I know they're a historically good program, but I mean, Indiana State. I mean, you look at some of these programs, Oregon, but there's no Texas. There's no Florida. There's no LSU. It's somewhat of a strange year. So, which we love to see. I mean, different programs are stepping up and doing well, and that's what makes college baseball and college athletics so much fun. So
it grows the game. It's great for the game. I'm a huge mid-major guy. A lot of friends that played at mid-majors, big fan of mid-major programs. Seeing them in the rankings, and just college baseball is one of those games where, in the SEC alone, but in all college baseball, anyone can beat anyone. I mean, we've seen Nicholls State beat LSU. We've seen these just crazy teams in mid-majors who, if you bet on college baseball, it's probably a terrible idea, because college baseball, and I believe, is the hardest sport to bet on, unless you followed my picks last week with I had a sweep. So kind of touch on that again. But I mean, mid-majors, I mean, we had Coastal Carolina win it in 2016. You had Oral Roberts go to Omaha in 2023, last season, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Love a good mid-major that compete with these SEC caliber teams. And it's great for the game of baseball. It grows the game. There's so much talent in baseball, and it's just so fun to watch each year, and just the different storylines and themes from players to teams. We love it. Quick little shout out to Texas A&M coach. How did you say his name? Jim Schlossnagel?
Correct? Schlossnagel, yeah. Schloss.
I believe he wore one on the hamstring this series. I believe so, if I remember seeing Twitter correctly and saw a picture of it. So shout out to him for wearing that. Rub some dirt on, Yeah, I'm here for it.
Schloss is a legend, no doubt. Schloss is a legend, no doubt. Guys, that's going to do it all for us. Appreciate each and every single one of you tuning in. Be sure, again, hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Hit the like button as well, and hit the bell icon for notifications when we drop videos, which is each and every single day. Also, check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're all across social media and the website as well, secunfiltered.com. For Harrison Fan, I'm Chris Phillips. Guys, appreciate you all tuning in, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of The Windup.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. So we